Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although, we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. You know what's a load of bollocks?
Me. Something to do with me.
No, not you this time, actually.
Right.
You know the, like, serving size guidelines?
Yes.
Bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. I've actually looked at it before, and I'd be starving to death.
Yeah.
If I
know, like, because some people take it real literal, but as far as I know, it's meant to be kind of, you know, like the, it's just a guideline, a rough, a notion.
Yeah.
A whisper of a suggestion.
Mm.
So I've been devouring rich tea biscuits this last week.
Yeah.
Excessively.
Yeah.
It's been a bit of a thing. I can't stop myself. Even you, who doesn't like rich tea, turned me to, I assume, to try and lessen the blow of my self-hatred. And you went, no, but it's easily done. Rich tea, you know, because they're quite, you know, they're kind of mild. They're easy to keep eating. Like,
as long as you're having a cup of tea with it.
You never eat rich tea, though. This is the hilarious thing. You were just trying to make me feel better about myself as I lay there covered in crumbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I were there on Oreos.
So I ate the entire thing. The entire sleeve of biscuits. Yeah.
Not in a day.
No. I did it in about 5 servings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to know what the suggested serving amount was?
Go on.
50.
50 what?
50 servings. There was allegedly 50 servings in that packet of rich tea biscuits.
So you had 10 servings a day?
Apparently.
For 5 days.
There's no, like, you saw the pack of biscuits. It was a big, big packet.
Yeah, it's like a double barrel pack.
Oh, no, but they're the thin ones. They're the rich tea fingers.
No, the packet is double barrel.
No, it's not. No, it looks that way, but the biscuits, instead of a circle, they're long. So although it's the width, it's not the
There's not two stacks.
No.
In a pack.
No.
Oh. I thought it was.
My point being, it was a bigger pack. You know?
Well, you're not half as bad as I thought you were then.
Oh, thank you. You know, but it is a big enough pack of biscuits.
Yeah.
But 50?
Yeah.
50.
Mm.
That's a bit much.
See, I used to be able to put it away. But like, say if I'm sat there with a pack of Oreos, with my coffee, I'll have 2 or 3 done.
2 or 3?
Mm.
Oreos are richer,
That's still probably double the serving.
Oreos are richer, so I get what you're saying, but even then, I'd probably have 5.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not bad. They're limited edition ones, the Jaffa Cake inside.
Jaffa Cake? You mean cream egg?
Oh, no,
cream egg.
Cream egg, yeah.
Cream egg. Yeah. You know what's nice? The coffee ones. Is it vanilla latte or
vanilla
something?
Vanilla latte.
They were nice, like them.
Yeah, we got the birthday cake ones. They were all right.
The birthday cake was pretty much just an Oreo. I didn't taste much difference.
It was a bit more sugary.
Yeah, a little bit sweeter. But, you know, it's nothing to write home about.
Mm.
The vanilla one, or the vanilla latte one, that one, you know, you got a bit of the coffee flavor there. Them cinnamon, was it?
Gingerbread.
No, gingerbread Christmas ones. They were fucking lethal.
Yeah, we got about 10 packs of them.
Well, they went on clearance, so we had to. We had to help out Tesco. Lemon puffs. What about an old lemon puff? We love them.
Yeah, but
they're lethal.
They're just fucking expensive. You're talking £3 for a pack of biscuits.
Oh, no, I won't buy branded biscuits unless they're on offer.
In fact, them lemon puff, I think they're about £3.50.
Yeah, when they're on offer, it's usually £1.50, and I might spring for a pack of them and treat myself. But no, it's gone ridiculous though for a pack of bloody biscuits. Get you some your rich tea. get you some of them rich tea.
Yeah.
Pay like what, 85 cents? I think it's 65 for the like really basic ones.
Yeah,
and they're all the fucking same. It's rich tea.
Yeah, it's like if you go to Tesco and you get the Tesco own brand bourbons, they're 80 cents.
Mm.
a bourbon's a fucking bourbon. A custard cream.
Yes.
I've never tasted a custard cream or a bourbon and it's been different.
No, never.
It's the exact, and I mean the exact same.
Of course it is. And we'll die on this hill.
Yeah. Now, Jaffa Cake, I've had.
Yeah, yeah.
I've had a cheap brand Jaffa Cake and it was fucking diabolical.
Now, I buy the knockoff brand Jaffa Cakes, yeah? But you do notice a difference. The orange in it is considerably smaller.
Yeah.
But having said that, shrinkflation and all that carry on, I haven't bought a packet of Jaffa Cakes in years. I bet they're shite now.
Well, I keep pointing at the hot honey ones.
I'm not, I can't, right. Is
hot
there,
honey Jaffa Cakes.
If they're reduced dramatically, just to try it, I will. But I'm not spending out to buy hot honey.
Actually,
Jaffa Cakes.
For our American listeners, I don't want to seem ignorant, but other than cookies, what packets of biscuits do you have?
Well, this is the thing. They don't call them biscuits. They call all biscuits cookies, don't they?
When I say a cookie, I mean a chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah, to us, cookies is a separate thing.
Yeah.
It's a separate issue.
But other than that, what packets of biscuits? Have you got any chocolate biscuits or creamy jam?
They have the Girl Scouts thing, don't they? They go around selling biscuits, the door-to-door or something.
Oh, yeah, fucking mint.
You get kids.
Mint arrows.
Kids coming to your door harassing you, trying to tap you for money.
Yeah. Coconut charms.
Jacked up price for a pack of biscuits. Pack of Jammy Dodgers.
Just to buy some little twat a fucking bike.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Glad we don't do that over here.
So, what you got for us today?
Today we are going to be talking about Kimberly Cargill and the murder of Cherry Walker.
Okay. So you told me who's the killer already?
Possibly.
Kimberly.
Most likely.
Yeah.
I did, yeah.
So go on, what happened? Did you have a tiff?
No.
Oh, so it's accidental?
No. On the 19th of June 2010, the body of a woman was found by the roadside in Smith County, Texas. She was not able to be identified immediately, as her body had been burned. 4 days following the discovery, the body was able to be identified as well as her cause of death. This woman was 39-year-old Cherry Walker, and her cause of death was asphyxiation, but the means were unknown.
Smoke?
No.
What do you mean no? You just said unknown.
We don't know, what type of ligature or what have you was used, but...
Oh, okay. I'll try to press you then.
Cherry was described as a genuine, nice, good person. She worked as a babysitter and was said to have adored the child she took care of. Now, I believe Cherry had an intellectual disability. The terminology used seems to change between sources. Some were saying she had a learning disability, which, to my understanding, is dyslexia, dyscalculia, that kind of thing.
But you can just naturally be a bit slow. Why are you looking at me like that?
Whatever the case may be, Cherry's stepmother described her as having the mind of a child.
Bit disrespectful, isn't it?
How so?
Saying someone who's in the 30s has got a mind of a child.
But we don't know what difficulties she was facing, what disability she had. So we're going with what someone close to her was saying.
Yeah, but I'm just saying... Surely there's a nicer way of putting it. It sounds a bit...
I think her stepmother meant it more in the way of innocence, naivety.
Right. Okay.
Now, despite her struggles, her stepmother said that she was, quote, on the road to really being able to live like she wanted to live normally. She had a new apartment and was hoping to soon obtain a driving license. Cherry was said to have had a heart of gold and that babysitting was the joy of her life. So who would do this to Cherry and what was their motive? Her family said that she wouldn't have gotten into the car of the stranger, that it had to have been someone Cherry knew.
Like Kimberly.
Enter Kimberly. The mother of the child who Cherry would babysit for was, like you said, a woman named Kimberly Cargill. Kimberly Diane Cargill was born in Mississippi on the 30th of November 1966. She'd been married three times and had four sons between these marriages. Kimberly met one of her husbands, Brian, through a mutual friend who had set them up on a blind date. They went to the cinema together and watched the movie So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Had to be, didn't it?
It did, didn't it? He actually, because I was watching him speak about it on a show, and he's like, that was actually, that's not a joke. It was the movie we saw. Now, at first, Brian saw Kimberly as charming, caring, and kind. There's that word again, charming. It's no good, is it?
No.
Charming and charismatic are those two that you're just like,
yes.
Cut it off.
I only said it to you yesterday about the word charismatic. Someone said to me, I see him over there, he's very charismatic. It's like, oh, he's a prick then.
Yeah, that was the exact word I was about to use.
He's a tosser then.
Yeah.
Jumped up prick is what I would take for someone who's charismatic.
Mm. Tosser is almost like lighthearted. Prick is like, yeah.
Yeah. Or a wanker.
So the charming trait aside,
mm.
The kind and caring side, these traits were attractive to Brian, especially as he was a father to a young child. And as they had both been divorced, this was something they had bonded over. But as the relationship went on, red flags started to materialise. Kimberly could be controlling, and if things deviated from how she wanted them to be, the repercussions would be severe. Brian tried to end the relationship multiple times, but Kimberly always sort of talked him around. When he finally worked up the courage to end the relationship for good, Kimberly announced that she was pregnant.
Of course she did.
Well, this actually came as quite a shock to Brian, as he had thought that Kimberly was unable to get pregnant following a previous high-risk pregnancy. This may not have been how Brian envisioned welcoming a new child into his life, but of course, he did still want to be a part of his child's life. This didn't change his feelings towards his relationship with Kimberly, though. He stood firm, and when he voiced that he thought that they should still break up, she gave him an ultimatum. They either get married, or he will not be a part of this child's life.
Can't fucking use the kid as a weapon.
No. But people do, sadly.
Hmm.
So what do you think happened next?
He married her.
They got married. And Kimberly's behaviour worsened over time.
Of course it fucking did, because now she's got the power.
Yep. During one argument, Kimberly threw a hammer at Brian.
Take it you don't mean a toffee hammer, or like one of the kiddies' toys hammer.
No, a hammer.
A fucking, like, a Peter Sutcliffe hammer.
A hammer. Now, Brian...
You can't just go around lobbing Sutcliffes about.
No, you shouldn't do that. Not even Sutcliffe should have been doing that.
Well, he weren't lobbing it. He never left his hand.
We don't actually know. We weren't there. Well, you might have been because of the whole family connection. Yeah. I don't know if you ever witnessed anything, but I didn't.
Why did I fucking bring Sutcliffe up?
Did you ever see anything? Are you withholding information?
It'd explain a lot, but no.
So back to Brian.
Mm.
Don't worry about Brian. Brian did duck, and the hammer lodged in the wall.
So she threw it that hard.
Yes.
It went through the plaster and lodged in the wall.
It was just hanging out of the wall. And I'll do you one better. After this, both Brian and Kimberly left the hammer in the wall for days. For Brian, he was hoping Kimberly would see it and eventually realise the severity of what she'd done. But this day never seemed to arrive. After a year of marriage, the couple divorced. And luckily, Brian was awarded custody of their son, Jamie. But then an opportunity presented itself for Kimberly's manipulative, calculated nature to come out in full force. One evening, Jamie decided to stand in front of the TV, refusing to move until his dad changed the channel. After arguing back and forth, Brian stood up and attempted to move Jamie. Jamie pushed back against his father, and during this scuffle, Jamie fell back and hit his head on the corner of the TV unit. Now, overall, it seems that the situation went a bit far, but the injury to Jamie was the result of an accident.
Yeah.
But once Jamie told Kimberly about what happened, she decided to call a lawyer and get Jamie's account down on paper.
All the melodramatics.
well, with a few adjustments made to suit her agenda.
Yeah. Fucking hell, Brian.
According to the affidavit, Brian picked Jamie up by the shirt and body slammed him to the floor. And unfortunately, Kimberly's tactics worked and she was given custody of Jamie. And now he was the main target of her abuse. So you're saying melodramatics, right? It's a bit more than that.
Yeah. No, I shouldn't have been larking about. But I am serious when I say this. Betty wished he'd moved from the fucking TV. That's all he had to do was move out of the way of the TV.
Yeah, but it's a kid acting up.
Yeah, I know. But
if anything, you could argue that Brian shouldn't have got up to move him. So, like I said, Jamie was now the main target for her abuse. When it came time for school photos, Kimberly would style Jamie's hair as she thought was best, a middle part and half a can of hairspray to hold it in place. Jamie, being a young lad, of course, wasn't too keen on his hair like this and would make sure to change it before the photographs were taken. But when Kimberly received the photos, her reaction was explosive. She slammed Jamie against a wall and began to beat him. But she would still remember to never hit him in the face to avoid detection. Jamie's father did notice bruises on his son from time to time and he was concerned, but he stated that Jamie was a rambunctious child and it was hard to tell one bruise from another.
Yeah.
Which is tough. I'm sure it was killing Brian, but especially after Kimberly had manipulated Jamie's account in the affidavit, I'm sure he was careful not to make Jamie feel like he was altering or persuading the narrative.
Yeah, like, no one would know if my parents... It'd be hard to prove if I was marked up by my parents because mm-hmm. I were constantly falling out of trees, scrapping at school.
Some kids are like that. They're just more kind of active and just messers and playing and, you know.
I always had a bruise. Yeah. Always. Whether it was my leg, arm, back, face.
Back.
Yeah.
That's when you fell flat out the tree.
Yeah. You know, going back to the school photos, because
mm-hmm.
this is like a split thing. So I want your opinion. School photo, you're the pupil.
Mm-hmm.
Is it your photo or is it your parents' photo?
I mean, I think it's your photo.
Yeah.
You know, I get it's kind of for the parents. They're paying for it. I get that.
Yeah.
But, you know... Let your kid be who they want to be.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Let them dress how they want to do their hair. Like, of course, if they were like going in filthy, like, yeah. I don't want to shower, form a piece. Like, no, have a bath and then style your hair how you want to wear the t-shirt you want to wear, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
It's for the kid.
No, I just thought I'd ask because I know there is like a divide when it comes to that, whether it's the parents' photo or the kids.
I've never really thought about it. No. When I was doing pictures, so it'd be, you know, my parents might want me to like look nice, but they never bothered. They'd be like, pick out a top you want to wear. It was kind of like they let me know you have to look well for the photo, but I get to pick what I want to wear.
Where I went to school, it weren't that scruffy. We had school uniforms. We had to wear school uniform.
Not in primary, no. And then they didn't do school photos in secondary. They did like a one of the year, but they didn't do individuals. It was only primary school we got like... And the pictures, I don't know about your school, but in mine, because me and my brother went to the same school, we'd get pictures together.
Yeah, they did with me and my brother.
Yeah.
But I had school uniform, infants, juniors and secondary.
But you know what's really annoying?
Mm.
So obviously like some people would do their kids' hair for picture day.
Yeah.
But if you wore your hair down, which I usually did, they would do your hair for you. They would always tie it back. Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's one picture of me with it down, but there's a few where they have it like scraped back. And I remember the pain of it when they were doing it, like ripping the hair out my head.
I think they did used to come at me with a comb, but no, I'd done my hair. My hair was staying like that.
And that, you know, half a pot of gel isn't cheap either, is it?
No.
Them combing it all out, ridiculous.
That wet look gel.
That was the look, yes.
From Wilkinson's, you used to be able to get a tub of it. Like 25p.
Brilliant.
And it'd last you...
A year.
Well, not with
you. Oh, not with you. Yeah, of course. A day and a half. If you were going out that night and had to reapply.
Yeah.
Day and a half.
Bottle of dupe and a bottle of fucking gel.
Shower, shit and shave. Is that a thing as well? Like, if you're going out for the night, would you try and have a shit before you go? Because I always hear lads say shower, shit and shave.
Well, I did because I was always scared when I was pissed I was going to shit myself. You know, IBS and that.
Hmm. Have you ever shit yourself while intoxicated? No.
Very close, but no.
Hmm. As the years went by, Kimberly would go on to have two more children to two different men. The kids took up a fair amount of the household chores. They would do the laundry, cook meals, general cleaning, which, within reason, is fair to expect your kids to do. But if the tasks were not completed to her liking, Kimberly would erupt. One of the ways she chose to discipline her children was to lock them in their bedrooms for hours. And if they needed to use the bathroom, well, that was their problem.
See, that won't work now. Locking them in the bedroom. The fucking consoles in there, the fucking... The switch, the laptop, the tablet, the phone.
Well, my mum always says that when I was a kid...
Piss out at window.
She would... Yeah, Jamie did say he had to do that at one point. He had to literally just go out the bedroom window because he was that desperate.
And we can.
Now, I was going to say, when I was younger, if my mum put me in like a timeout, what she'd do is she'd put me in my room, close the door. I wasn't locked in, but it was like, you're to stay in there for an hour or however long it was.
Mm.
And my mum said to me years later, she goes, it was hilarious because I'd put you in your room with all of your toys, PlayStation and everything was in there.
Yeah.
Like me and my brother shared the room, all of our toys. But I wouldn't go and play with anything. I wouldn't do it because I was so indignant about being put in a timeout that I would sit there and be like, how fucking dare you? I'd serve my time. Get on with it.
How old?
I can't remember, like say 5.
Oh, okay.
You know, like young enough.
No, like I remember when I was about 13, 14 and I'd been grounded. You know, so I was like, fuck the lot of years, I'm going to my room. Went to my room, climbed out at window, fucked off for a bit.
That's what I mean. Like, me and you were so different as kids.
You're not stopping me.
Yeah, you were like, you know, if you do this to me, I'm going to do my own thing. And you're like that now as an adult. You're a little shit. If I say to you, hey, Neil, can we do this? And you'll be like, yeah, grand, I'll do it in half an hour. If 2 hours goes by and I say, Neil, can we get going with this? Or yeah. We need to record whatever it is. You'll be like, don't hassle me.
Don't tell me.
There's a real issue with like the kind of, not so much even authority.
Yeah.
It's just the notion of someone trying to like guide you. And you're like, how fucking dare you? And you rebel against it. Whereas me, I was just like, this is outrageous. Yeah. I will sit here and stew over it.
No, because I learned something. So, right. And if our listeners have got the kids around, shoo them off. Don't let them listen to this. But as a kid, I quickly learned. And it was the same as when I was at school, if I were fucking about and I got suspended. Other than getting expelled, all they're going to do is keep suspending you. That's it.
Yeah.
Where at home, you're going to get grounded. Right? So I climb out of the fucking window, leg it out for a bit, come home. I didn't care if I'd been caught or not, because if I'd been caught, what were they going to do? They're going to say you're grounded again.
Yeah.
And I'm going to climb out at window again.
The most it can last is 18 years. Kimberly also took issue with how much time Jamie spent playing video games, because God forbid this poor child have some form of escapism. One day, while he and his brother were playing video games, Kimberly begins to berate him for doing so. She then walks over and unplugs the console.
Ah, you can't do that.
This is it. Jamie had enough. He grabbed the Xbox and threw it out of the window.
Should have thrown it at her fucking head.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's no big loss. It's probably the best place for an Xbox.
Yeah. Yeah, actually. Like, that's neglect. Get him a PlayStation.
Honestly. Well, here's the problem. Kimberly, clearly an Xbox fangirl, she then snatches the power cord for the console and wraps it around Jamie's neck.
Fucking hell.
As Jamie begins to gasp for air, his younger brother, who is witnessing this, begs his mother to stop. Kimberly finally releases her grip. And after this, Jamie calls the police. When officers arrive at the home, Kimberly puts on a show for the officers. She tells them that Jamie had attacked her, and she'd also coerced her younger son into going along with her story.
Fucking hell, I'd never play video games with him again.
Well, she's doing just as she had done to Jamie with his father.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the officers bought it. Over the years, Jamie had run away from home multiple times, but always ended up back in his mother's care. And it's sad because it only feeds back into her narrative that Jamie is this troubled kid and she's the poor, downtrodden mother. And as badly as Brian wanted to intervene, and no matter how much Jamie pleaded, there was not much that could be done without solid evidence of the abuse. Brian can't just come and pick up his son, he would be violating the custody agreement.
Right.
Brian did try to speak with police, but he was told there was nothing that they could do. It just, you know, it's not a criminal matter.
Yeah, they're not going to listen to him anyway.
Well, it's just you're in this shitty situation where you have to endure this and wait until something is more physically evident.
Mm.
But that day did eventually come. When Kimberly found Jamie in her room one day, she lunged at him and began to smash his head against the hardwood floor before strangling him.
Who can afford hardwood floors?
As horrific as this incident was, it was finally something tangible for Jamie and Brian to go to the police, which did allow Brian to regain custody. Jamie would still visit his mother every other weekend, and he took these visits as an opportunity to check on his brothers Zach and Luke rather than spend time with his mother.
Yeah.
And who can blame him at this point?
I was literally about to go, why? Why is he going back? But before I could even get the words out, it popped into my head, look out for Lord Bros.
I mean, he's experienced it firsthand, and the last thing he'd want is to be passed on to someone even younger than him.
Well, I'd check on one. I wouldn't check on the other. I'd be like, you fucking told the police that I attacked Mom.
But the thing is, Jamie has experienced that firsthand. He did it to his father.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What is it about this Kimberly? Kick her head in.
That's easier said than done. If you've ever had, you know, been in a relationship or even a friendship with someone who's controlling, or, you know, a parent who's that way, you're just kind of under their control. And it seems crazy from the outside, but when you're in that, you know? Yeah.
I don't know. For me, I got to a certain age. I'd say when I got to about 15, maybe about 15 year old, and it was like, hit me again. Dare you to hit me again.
You're talking about your parents?
Yeah. You feared them. You know, but then, yeah, I got to about 15 year old and it was like a day to hit me.
Yeah. I mean, that can be the flip side of it is if it's like a physical abuse thing.
Mm.
If the person does suddenly flip and realizes, hang on, I'm grown now.
Yeah.
It can be a total 180.
Yeah.
And suddenly the parent is the one who's like, oh, fuck. Now, Kimberly losing custody of Jamie was just the beginning of her downfall. Not long after this, Kimberly lost custody of Zach, and then a custody battle ensued for Luke.
She's going to spiral now.
Well, Kimberly's children and ex-husband would all speak out about her abuse, and due to the allegations made against Kimberly, she was placed under investigation by Child Protective Services. Now, the reason that Cherry had been killed was because she had been called to testify against Kimberly in the CPS trial. On the day that Cherry received the subpoena, Kimberly picked her up under the guise of taking her out for dinner. Kimberly then murdered Cherry before dousing her body in lighter fluid and setting her on fire.
Fucking hell.
Well, look, I can't understand this. There was already an army of people ready to speak out against Kimberly. So did Cherry know something even more troubling that Kimberly did not want uncovered? Or, with her kids being taken away from her, did Kimberly just redirect her violent, abusive ways towards Cherry?
Yeah, easy target and all.
Cherry was wonderful to Kimberly's son. It was said that Cherry would use her food stamps to make sure that Luke was fed, And a lot of the time, Kimberly didn't even pay Cherry. Or if she left Luke with her for the night, she might give her $20. Cherry's stepmother felt that she was being taken advantage of and cautioned her about working for Kimberly. But Cherry loved Luke and wanted to look out for him. Kimberly was quickly identified as the lead suspect, and Kimberly, at the time, was being held on charges of causing injury to a child. Now, while in jail, Kimmy made some calls, and well, they didn't exactly paint a picture of innocence. Over 3 phone calls, Kimberly had asked others to get rid of evidence from within her home, including clothing that she had worn the night of the murder.
Fuck's sake.
At the location where Cherry's body had been found, a coffee creamer packet was found. It was tested and came back positive for Kimberly's DNA. As well as this, some items belonging to Cherry were found within Kimberly's car. Police checked her criminal record and saw her previous arrest for assault, her probations, among other things. So, no good, Kimmy.
Not very smart herself, is she? Fucking using the phone in prison. Saying, get that evidence shifted from when I did that murder.
Not the sharpest knife in the block.
No, not even a sharp pencil.
About a month into the investigation, Kimberly was charged with capital murder. Her trial began on the 8th of May, 2012. Kimberly maintained her innocence and pleaded not guilty. Would you like to hear Kimberly's justification of the situation?
Go on, because I can't even guess.
Right. She stated that while in the car, Cherry had a seizure, and while driving her to the hospital, Cherry stopped breathing. Kimberly said that as she drove to the hospital, she must have took a wrong turn, and because of this, caused a delay in medical assistance. Fearing for Cherry's well-being, Kimberly began administering CPR, but she failed to revive Cherry.
And then she rolled down the hill into a fucking fire.
Well, she said, this is the bit that she is kind of owning up to a bit more because her DNA evidence is at the scene. Kimberly said that she then panicked and decided to dispose of the body by burning it. So she admits to the disposal of the body. Right. But her death was an accident, okay, according to Kimberly.
But her death weren't by seizure.
No, well, she's admitting to what she can't weasel her way out of, but is making herself out to be not like a hero, but she did everything she
possibly
could.
I did my best.
It was a scary situation, yeah, and I tried my best.
Yeah.
And it's like bollocks to you. Now, Kimberly had hurt a lot of people, and there was more than enough ready to testify about her behaviour. Jamie said of his mother in the court that day, she was a woman who was broken beyond repair. Her eyes were like steel, just cold and lifeless. Her ex-husband spoke of her abuse and her false allegations against them, which resulted in their arrests. Her third husband spoke of how Kimberly went as far as to set his apartment on fire, though Kimberly denies this. Her first husband spoke of how she would throw glasses, knives, anything that was within reach.
Hammers.
But he did state that it was fair to say that both of them had been at fault for the failure of their marriage. By the way, this man hadn't seen or spoken to her in 10 years, and he described their marriage as, quote, one of survival.
See, this is something... Right, she's clearly guilty. But this is something I think the courts should always take into consideration. Having exes testifying against you, it's very biased.
Right. Absolutely take your point. I get what you're saying. But her ex-husbands had gained custody of the kids. And considering she was initially under investigation, before she was charged with capital murder.
Yeah.
She was under investigation for causing injury to a child. So the fact that she had done that and, Cherry had been subpoenaed to talk, it does link back in.
Yeah. Well, it's like, right, one of my exes, right, bastard, but she was never violent towards me. If the cops got in touch with me and went, Was you in a relationship with her? Yeah. Would you like to speak, like, from your experiences? Yeah. What's the crime? Oh, well, she's up for murder. Like, there's nothing stopping me going into that courtroom going, I'm not surprised. She was always threatening to fucking kill me. She was all like, I could fucking lie my tits off just to fucking get her sent down.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think, well, it's not that exes shouldn't be able to testify, but.
No, I completely get your point, but I'm just saying in this case, you know, I'm assuming there are at least some records here and there, some police reports of these men going to CPS or through the courts or to the police themselves, you know, to say this happened, that happened, X, Y, and Z.
Mm.
Okay. And also the numerous reports she's filed against them. So even if it was tit for tat, there's still hostility every relationship that Kimberly is in.
Yeah.
Her first husband went on to explain the situation in regards to the custody of their son. The child had lived with Kimberly until the divorce was finalised. Kimberly then had visitation, which turned to supervised visitation. And then at the age of 12, their son requested that the visitations be stopped. Kimberly's other ex-husbands had actually been in contact with the first husband, as they wanted advice on how to get custody and essentially save their children. See, that's some shit there.
Yeah.
When all your exes are trying to get together to get the kids away from you.
Yeah, yeah.
Although he had been aware of Kimberly's aggression and extreme fluctuations in behaviour, he wasn't aware of any physical abuse, and his son did not tell him. This is the first husband.
Yeah.
Because of Kimberly's abuse, he stated that his son would become aggressive after having been around her, and that their son saw psychologists from the ages of 4 until 14.
It's so true. It's like, my father is an angry man. Always angry.
Yeah.
And if I'm round him, I start getting angry. I start getting worked up and, you know, I could drop a pen on the floor and that's my day done. I'm fucking livid.
Mm.
You know, when I'm round you, it's all right. Yeah.
What do you mean? You're calm?
Sometimes.
You're more relaxed? Or what do you mean by that?
I think my temperament's a lot better.
Oh, good.
Don't mean you don't know how to push my buttons, but I can drop a pen on the floor without putting my fist through the floor. What I'm trying to say, yeah, I get that, you know, because when I was around my dad, I'd start getting angry.
You start feeding off their energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I'm around you, I'm like a nervous wreck.
What?
Because you're a nervous wreck.
Oh, you're feeding off my energy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were trying to say that I was aggressive. You're a nervous wreck around me.
I'm a shell of a man. not a nervous wreck. More like a socially awkward little twat.
Okay. Kimberly and her first husband's son, who was 21 at the time of the trial, did testify against Kimberly. But he had been extremely stressed at the thought of it and had been struggling to sleep because of this. Her first husband then spoke of how she struggles to take accountability and described her as clever, manipulative, and controlling. Kimberly's sister echoed her ex-husband's words and branded her as, quote, the devil. That's her sister. Her mother spoke of how Kimberly was quick to become angry and couldn't handle when things didn't go her way. So that's mammy selling you out as well. Yeah.
And I don't know why you're so surprised at the devil thing. I've called my brother a lot worse. You've called your brother a lot worse.
No. There's a big difference to, you know, having an argument with your sibling and calling them a name to being in court about your sibling murdering someone and abusing kids and be like, they're the devil.
Yeah.
That's not great. One of Kimberly's kids' teachers spoke of her inappropriate behaviour as well. She described Kimberly as very intense and intimidating. When she attempted to speak with Kimberly's son, Kimberly would speak for him. She also witnessed Kimberly grab her child by the arm and forcefully yank the child towards her. If the child scored less than a 96 on an assignment, Kimberly would demand that they be given additional work, and this was something that the teacher refused to do. She noted how timid the child appeared, bruising she had noticed, and how he'd often wear long sleeves even in warmer weather as if he was deliberately trying to cover up.
Yeah.
Another teacher stated that if they were to say, you know, touch the child on the arm, he would flinch.
Stop touching the child.
She described Kimberly as, quote, sweet as sugar one minute and mad as a hornet the next. That's some southern sounding shit right there, isn't it?
You wouldn't happen to be taking the piss out of country bumpkins now, would you?
I absolutely am. No, that's, do you ever see the clips of that guy? Like his whole thing is doing like what like elderly southern men say when they're wanting to start
yes,
a fight.
Yes. Some of the stuff he's come out with. Fucking brilliant. He's always dressed like he's going hunting.
Yeah, and like stepping at you.
Yeah.
Mm. One of the teachers did note that the boy's overall demeanour appeared to become more relaxed once living with his father. So again, same as her first son, once he's out of that situation, mm-hmm. you're seeing a difference in the child.
Yeah.
An elderly woman named Barbara Chamberlain also spoke at the trial. Barbara was the step-grandmother to one of Kimberly's ex-boyfriends. Although Barbara hadn't seen Kimberly since 1999, she remembered her and had some things to say. Barbara and Kimberly had gotten into an altercation years previous, and during this, Kimberly grabbed and twisted Barbara's arm. In order to get Kimberly off of her, Barbara kicked her. This resulted in Kimberly falling back and onto a table. Kimberly, I'm sure, stunned that Barbara wasn't putting up with her shit, then turned to her and said, "What's the matter with you? Don't you know I'm pregnant?" To which Barbara replied, "You may not be anymore."
Oh.
Barbara is an absolute fucking savage. Jesus Christ.
Fuck. I tell you what, you know when it comes to like, you know, trials and that? Like the stretch they'll go to getting people to come in and testify. This is the fucking father-in-law's fucking cousins, next door neighbours, dog walkers, fucking mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Kimberly, how did they even approach it? Like,
well, okay, so with Barbara, the savage Barbara, there was actually a record of this assault, but it was reduced to a Class C misdemeanor and did not go to court. But there is still paperwork. But
okay.
You are very right. As we can see, just about anyone who crossed paths with Kimberly had been negatively affected to varying degrees. And although it was important for those to speak and testify to her behaviour, this trial was for the murder of Cherry.
Mm.
Cherry's father and stepmother also spoke at the trial. They said, quote, "Mrs. Cargill, this is what I want you to know. Cherry loved you. She did not deserve the terrible things you did to her. We have accepted what God has allowed. He allowed this to happen for a reason, and we accept that. We don't hate you because we're not made out of hate. We only have love and pity and compassion for you."
I don't know how that works. You must have some hate in you. You must have. We still love you. What?
No, they didn't say that. We only have love, pity and compassion. They weren't keen on Kimberly to begin with. They didn't want Cherry working for her.
Yeah.
But, I mean, basically, I don't want to speak for them, but I assume the sentiment is, I'm not going to hold on to this anger I have against you. It's only going to hurt me. It's not like Kimberly's not going to give a fuck.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of, I think, it's fine to be angry and feel those emotions, but it's the difference between feeling it, working through it and getting on with shit and then holding on to it your whole life.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I couldn't do it.
Hmm?
I couldn't do it. I'd just be like, I hate you.
Yeah, but you need to learn to work through your emotions. You know, like I've said...
Hang on a minute. Whoa. Someone's just killed my daughter and I'm the one with issues.
You just said that really, really posh.
What?
Daughter. You said it really posh. Daughter.
Never been told I sound posh.
Mm, well, you have now. No, but we've had this conversation before. I'm not... Right, you seem to think when I say like, oh, you know, why are you so angry? That I'm saying you can't get angry. Mm. I'm not saying you can't get angry. I'm saying, you know, work through it, you know, fucking deal with it and move on. But if you're never addressing it, you're just getting more and more fucking rage fueled and you're going to explode.
Yeah.
As the terrible, terrible Dr. Phil says, you can't fix what you don't acknowledge.
He's not a doctor.
No, he's not. He's terrible, but I agree with that.
He'll have fucking got that from a fortune cookie or something.
Do you remember my dad used to quote that all the time?
Yes.
Just to annoy us.
Yes. And then he'd watch fucking one episode of Joe Kender and it's my.
Oh, yeah. I actually was going to get him a t-shirt that says my on it. Couldn't find a good enough one. Have to get one done myself. A forensic psychiatrist testified that Kimberly was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder with antisocial and narcissistic tendencies, but noted that she was able to distinguish right from wrong. It was stated that she displayed, quote, moderate psychopathic characteristics, which resulted in chronic anger, hostility, and impulsivity. The pathologist who conducted the autopsy testified that Cherry's death was consistent with homicidal violence. So there goes Kimberly's story out the window.
See, if I was sat in the courtroom when they said that, I'd have been like, well, ah.
Well, ah. This is a fucking Texas, right? And there's, you know, they just said something like that. You know, something very fucking serious. And you down the back, well, ah.
Well, ah.
Well, ah.
That's when some Texas is like, someone doing a magic trick.
Yeah.
What's his fucking problem?
Kimberly's defense attorney said, quote, a lot of decisions she has made for the last 2 decades have been fueled by her personality disorder. We're not trying to excuse anything she's done for the last 20 years. Just put it into context. On the 18th of May, 2012, Kimberly was found guilty of capital murder, and on the 7th of June, Kimberly was sentenced to death. She remained emotionless as the verdict was read. The most emotion she was said to have shown throughout the trial was during her son's testimonies against her. The prosecutor, Matt Bingham, who was over 15 years' experience, said of this case, quote, I've never come across another defendant like Kimberly Cargill. To have someone so narcissistic, someone who is so manipulative and cunning, she is the first and hopefully the last.
See, I can just imagine her sitting there, you know, listening to the verdict and having that face on her, like, why is everyone going against me? And it's because you've been smacking them all about for fucking years. You've been violent to fucking everyone.
Mm.
It's not like they're ganging up on you now.
Yeah.
It's just, it's all coming down on you.
I was going to say, your past is finally fucking caught up with you.
Yeah. Bet you she had a bottom lip out.
After Kimberly was sentenced to death, Jamie really struggled with this. Although he was happy that this was finally over and justice had been served, he didn't want to be a contributing factor to somebody's death. Despite her attempts to make contact, Jamie has said that he has no interest in ever seeing his mother again. Her eldest son, who had not been in contact with her for years, doesn't even consider her to be his mother. And when he heard the news that she had been charged with capital murder, this was, understandably, incredibly difficult for him.
Mm.
I don't want to speak for him or anyone else who was subjected to her abuse, of course, but I would think it may have been a realization that she was, in fact, capable of ending someone's life.
Could have been one of the kids.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, for them, it's like, it wasn't just, I mean, she wasn't just taking out her anger and aggression. She was capable of going that far.
Yeah.
Kimberly has attempted to appeal her conviction multiple times, stating that the evidence was not sufficient, her legal counsel was insufficient, the judge allowing certain testimonies, but not others.
Oh, do you mean your lies?
This is what I mean. I don't think it matters what was said and done. Kimberly was always going to try and weasel out of it. That's what kept coming back around. That's what kept getting said about her, is she will not take accountability.
Yeah.
I got to be honest, we spent so much time talking about this fucking turd of a woman. The reality is, Kimberly left a trail of chaos and destruction wherever she went. There was many casualties to Kimberly's refusal to take accountability or seek help. And ultimately, Cherry lost her life because Kimberly wanted to hide her disgusting, abusive behaviour. Cherry, who only ever showed love, affection and care towards Kimberly's child. And sadly, Cherry sort of gets lost in the story under the weight of Kimberly's overall behaviour. Cherry's family said, quote, "How could anyone take such innocence? That's what I want to say. Such innocence, and be so violent, so mean, so evil." Brian, Jamie's father, said of Cherry, quote, "She was a kind of a pure soul in so many ways. I can't help but look at her as a kind of martyr for us, a symbol of the hideousness of what Kimberly did." And that is the case of Kimberly Cargill and the murder of Cherry Walker. Neil?
Hmm?
You okay?
Yeah.
Any comments?
I have a theory.
Okay.
On why Kimberly killed her. So I think the testifying thing was the last straw. I think what amped it up before that was jealousy.
That her child got on well with
her. Yeah, I think that listening to you tell the case of her, there's no doubt in my mind if she was there while Cherry was there babysitting, that she weren't like fucking fist clenched, getting fucking riled up. Why are they laughing? What's so fucking funny? That sort of fucking thing.
Mm.
Why aren't the kids like that with me?
Yeah.
And then I think the testifying thing was like, right, you're fucked.
Do you reckon?
Mm.
You don't think there's a chance that maybe Cherry saw something, witnessed something that Kimberly didn't want getting out?
Oh, yeah. Could be that too. Yeah. Mm. But I still think my theory is...
No, I mean, I did consider... Amicable. I did consider that side of it myself, but it's hard to think that way because it doesn't seem like she gave a fuck about her kids other than having them as, you know, more of a possession.
Yeah, but you right. I know this is real life, but think of How I Met Your Mother. Yeah. How Robin is with Patrice. It might have been like that. It might have been this something about Cherry. What just boils my piss? Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, yeah.
You know.
It's you constantly referring back to fiction that
no.
winds me up. I don't mind if you go, oh, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's ha-ha reference. Mm. But it's the fact that you reference it about serious shit. And of all the shows to reference, How I Met Your Fucking Mother.
But somehow it works.
What, your reference?
Yeah.
Not really.
Oh.
Yeah.
You couldn't see Kimberly going, "Nobody asked you, Cherry."
I mean, I could, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair point, well made.
This is what I mean. Look, I'm saying How I Met Your Mother to give you the visual because you've seen How I Met Your Mother. But that's what I think could have happened. I think it could have been this something about fucking Cherry what really pisses me off. She gets under my skin.
You think
the way she is with the kids,
yeah,
and the kids fucking love her. Why aren't the kids like that with me?
And right, so the fact that Kimberly murdered her the day she was subpoenaed, the day she received the subpoena, like, you think that's just a coincidence?
No, I said the last straw was Kimberly testifying.
Cherry. Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So she got that. She saw, but fucking Cherry were opening her mouth, as Kimberly had put it. And
which means as Kimberly would put it?
Well, she'll have seen it and gone, "She's opening her mouth."
Yeah, quote.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
She's opened her mouth. I'm going to go and have words.
Mm.
And got out of hand.
Not half.
So, what you got for us?
No, we've done the episode. That's your lot. I'll do another fucking case today. You can piss off.
So, oddity.
Aqueducts.
The things that, I know what they are.
Do you?
Yeah.
Like, I was going to ask.
They're like big pipes, aqueducts, the fucking.
No. Aqueducts. Dots.
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 Bubbles. Is that what you mean? That's dots in water, isn't it? Bubbles.
No, aquadots. Do you remember a kid's toy known as aquadots, aquabeads, beedos, or bindies?
No.
There's different, you know, depending on the country they're in. Yeah. I don't think they're referred to as aquadots over here.
What did we call them?
Bindies, I believe, is what we called them. Never heard of it. Okay. So this toy comprised of small plastic beads, which children would mix and match colours and arrange different patterns and designs. And when sprayed with water, these beads would stick together, allowing you to not only keep your design, but make it a multi-dimensional toy.
I'd rather just go to Toys R Us and buy some wrestlers and that.
Neil, in 2007, Bindies won Toy of the Year in Australia. You're not impressed by that?
How did that beat the Megazord in that?
I can't really remember what toys were kicking about in 2007. I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing. Sadly, that same year, aquadots, or bindies, had to be recalled across nations.
Poisonous.
I did not think you were going to say that.
Were they poisonous?
The next thing I was going to say to you was, can you guess why, Neil? And I was going to stop you before you answered and say, it wasn't because someone was shoving up their arse.
I was,
before you even say it.
Before you said that, I was going to say, the kids shoved it up their arse.
There you go. Same wavelength. I knew you would say it. To be fair, though, I bet there was at least one person who did that.
Well, it's like they say on In Between Us, how much Lego have you stuffed up your bum?
How many bindies have you shoved up your bum?
Well, I don't know how big they are. What?
They're small little beads, like.
Oh, so you get a couple of hundred in.
Anyway, they were recalled. Multiple children had become ill from this toy. They began suffering from respiratory issues, seizures, and fell into a comatose state after ingesting the beads. This was including a two-year-old boy who fell unconscious for 6 hours. Now, just to let you know, when the boy woke up, he was grand, he wasn't affected at all, apparently just continued playing as normal. He just had a good nap. So what had happened was, during manufacturing, these beads should have had a coating made with 1,5-pantenadol.
Okay.
Possibly how it's pronounced.
I know it well.
But instead, they were made with 1,4-butanadol.
Aw, idiots. You're just asking for trouble.
Well, you actually are. I know you're
a disaster.
I know you're taking the piss, but seriously, it is. Now, when 1,4-butanadol is metabolized in the body, it breaks down to GHB, or gamma hydroxybutyric acid.
Yeah, obviously, everyone knows that.
And it produces a sedative effect.
Hmm.
Now, Neil, are you familiar with GHB?
Yes. It's when you batter someone.
It's GBH.
Yeah.
Grievous bodily harm.
Yeah.
GHB.
Oh, GHB. GHB. It's that really common chemical, isn't it?
What if I said to you, date rape drug?
Oh yeah, I know that.
Why do you sound less alarmed now that I've said date rape drug in connection with kids' toys?
Kids were fucking ingesting date rape.
And there we go, the penny dropped, didn't it?
Oh, so that company's fucked.
You don't think it needs to be stated, but lads, you just can't be putting that in kids' toys.
No.
Don't be putting that in anything.
Fucking Aussies.
It wasn't just Australia.
Oh.
Australia just voted a kid's toy of the year.
Oh, okay.
The toy's production was moved to a different manufacturer where the correct formulation was ensured. And they also decided to coat the beads in Bitrex, which leaves a bitter taste, thus discouraging children from attempting to ingest the beads.
I always wondered that as a kid. Why make your toys taste nice? They should make them taste fucking revolting so kids won't put them in the mouth.
What kids' toys particularly tasted nice?
Batman's foot tasted nice.
I wasn't one of those kids that just like ate everything though. Chewed on stuff.
A Ninja Turtle's eared. That were nice. It like the groove in its gob would like sit on the tooth.
They also renamed the product from Bindi's to Beedo's in Australia, and in North America, the name was changed from Aquadots to Pixos. And as far as I'm aware, none of the children affected had any long-lasting effects from the very, very, very concerning misuse of chemicals. So Neil, what do you reckon to that? The old Aquadots.
It's a bit bad, isn't it?
It's a bit much.
Yeah.
Bit much. Fucking date rape drugs.
That's... How have I never heard of this? I've never even heard of the toy.
I hadn't heard of it. And I don't think I'm familiar with the toy. Like, I was watching old commercials and I was like, oh, let me have a look. I'm sure, like, maybe it'll trigger a memory.
Mm.
No. I can't play. Like, it was, like, vaguely familiar. I'm like, am I convincing myself? You know, like, the nostalgia of the fucking, like, 2000s toy ads.
Mm.
And I was like, am I convincing myself that I remember this? Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
I tell you how I actually came across this. I was listening to Till Death Do Us Part. And this was one of Daniel's factoids. So I've just stolen that from him.
Okay.
Good work, Daniel. This is a good one. This is a fucking good one. I mean, it's not a good one. It's fucking date rape drugs in a kid's toy. But the information on it...
Well, look, don't feel bad because he is literally like me. He hardly does anything.
Like, excuse me?
He reacts.
He does his factoids. He's contributed to the content of this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I'll have you know.
It'd be like me doing the auditors. Wouldn't it? Sort of thing. You do the
essentially,
case
and, yes.
Yeah. So I take that back. I'm sorry, Daniel.
No, but I'm making the point. He has now contributed to our podcast. He's given me some...
Forcefully? You've nicked it.
No, but he's not forcing it.
No, you're forcing him to help this podcast.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Thank you, Daniel, for all your hard work. This is brilliant. We'll give you a credit here.
Just one thing though to do with this date rape toy. You imagine if someone didn't twig, but it was the toy, and the parents took the kid to the fucking doctor. Pediatrician, as they call it in America. And they
just, we have pediatricians over here, just so you know.
They did the testing, yeah?
Yeah.
And it comes up date rape and they just turn the head at the parents. Like, how would you explain that?
Well, that's
as
the
a
thing.
Parent, you're fucked.
At what point did they test for that? Because you're not going to test for that.
Well, you can do a test for any, like, you can test blood and it's literally.
No, it's not.
What?
You have this in your head that when... we've had this argument so many times
before. You can go for the full fucking valet.
No, you think they're going to test for everything in do you have any idea how many things there are that can be tested? That you can test for?
Yeah. But it's 2026, Megan.
You don't get to go back on what you're saying and try and make little justifications here and there. You have it in your head that when you go to a doctor, they're a miracle worker and they're going to fucking find out any last little thing that's wrong with you.
No,
that's not how it works.
No, I've seen it where they'll take your blood and
don't fucking start with me.
And they'll put sticker on it and it's like, right, that's the test for all cancers. And then they take more blood and then they put that in a fucking vial and they put a sticker on it.
I have had blood tests. I'm familiar with the process, but that doesn't mean they're testing me for every last thing known to man.
Look, how are you saying, but that isn't possible, but someone can swab my suitcase at security at the airport, stick it through a machine and turn around and go, cocaine in there. There's been cocaine in that fucking bag.
Will you fucking say cocaine, right?
So are you telling me a paediatrician can't, like, swab something, scan it and go, there's fucking date rape in that?
It's not... Oh my fucking God. It's not about whether they have the capability to do it. It's about whether they generally do that in practice. Like, is that something that they would test for? I'm going to take a guess. No, that's not their everyday testing.
No, I'm not saying they would test for it. I'm saying the machine would flash up, date rape. Like it does in the airport in security.
But the airport security are specifically looking for different types of drugs being smuggled in.
Yeah.
You're not specific. Right, if your child has fallen unconscious, you're not going to be like, date rape, it's date rape. When the parent's gone, he's been sat in the sitting room all morning, he was playing and then suddenly...
For 6 hours.
But no, this is what I'm saying to you, though. They're not, if they're... I can't do it. I actually can't. You talk in fucking riddles, you jump back and forth. Well, and then you know what you'll do? You'll try and jump to something else to try and like divert.
Right.
And I'm not getting sucked into it this time.
I'm not diverting. I'm going back. I'm asking you, if you're a mother, you're sat there and the doctor's done his testing and he swabs the kid, scans it, and it comes up date rape. And he just looks at you.
Where is it coming up date rape?
There's fucking date raping him. Explain yourself. What are you going to say?
Me?
Yeah. You're the mother.
Get dragged into the scenario.
Well, he's got date rape from somewhere.
I'll say I don't fucking know. I'm sure what the fucking 2-year-old's mother said was, how the fuck has that happened?
I know for a fact what you would say. Note to do with me, let me ring the father. Must be something to do with him.
Obviously, I'm going to think it's something to do with you because I know it's not me. Who else has been around our kid?
Aussie toy makers.
Little Jimmy. Who's been near little Jimmy?
Right, when we're talking about kids, don't say the name Jimmy.
Okay. Timothy. Little Timmy. Who's done the... Neil, who have you had around Timmy?
An Australian toy maker.
It's not Australian! It was sold in Australia. For fuck's sake. The toys were manufactured in China, but they were sold all over.
Mm.
Globally, they were sold.
So you're gonna have loads of people going, oh, it's China! China.
I'll tell you what as well, shout out Melissa from Till Death Do Us Part, because we kind of, Daniel got the shout out here.
Yeah, Melissa's the one who does all the graft.
Melissa's the real deal.
Do you know, for an episode, not only does she research, but then she'll sit and read books and she'll watch documentaries to do one episode.
You can't make it past Wikipedia for Neil's Nuggets, can you?
Ah, no. I was just going to say, no, I was bigging her up. How the hell, like, how fast are you reading a book?
I'm not a fast reader at all. But I said this to you before, I can read a book for a case. I can't really do it for personal enjoyment. I struggle to finish a whole book. So
I can't read.
Yeah.
I can't read a long message.
No, you actually pass the phone to me.
Yeah.
To read your messages.
Yeah.
Mm.